A lot goes into taking care of your property. You need equipment with more reliability, durability, and versatility built in. Like number one selling Kubota BX and L-Series compact tractors, Z-Series mowers that deliver a quality cut, and Sidekick utility vehicles where durability meets speed. Visit your local Kubota dealer for a demo today.
Visit GoKubota.com for a dealer near you.
Hey, it's Bob here. Bob Saget's here for you. That's the title. And I am. I actually am. And I'm trying to be here for all kinds of people. Sometimes I'm not as great. I'm trying to be better with people, especially people I care about. Those are sometimes the people that you take for granted and don't give all the love that they should be getting. And that's why I love talking to people on here. And you can call the number up at the top of the thing when you... And leave a message, tell me what you want to talk about, and I'll call you on days. I'll put it on my Instagram stories or my Twitter and tell you when I'm going to be calling. And then I have wonderful guests, like my guest today, who I won't tell you who it is, Josh Groban. And he is just an incredible, I don't have to tell you, he's an amazing talent and just a loving, dare I say, perfect person. We'll find out his imperfections as I talk to him. What's interesting is I made a mistake, and it's hilarious, and I'll never forget that I did it, and it's a life lesson. A lot of people say stuff that's not true, and they'll say, oh, I'm friends with so-and-so, and they will, then you find out they don't even know the person. I was watching Bowfinger the other night with Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy.
As you do. Great movie.
It just happened to be on, and I wanted to watch it, yeah. And they're both amazing because it's Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy, and it's all a lie. He's not really, it's like the producers. He's not, doesn't have legal rights to film Eddie Murphy as a director, and he makes this fake movie, and it turns out to be, I won't give away the ending. But somebody.
For those in the audience who've not yet watched Bowfinger, the last thing we want to do is spoil the ending of that movie here on the podcast.
Well, the end of The Empire Strikes Back is...
I do think there's an unwritten rule about how many years can pass before it's okay to just start talking about... Is that the one with the mind head where he goes to the kind of the... It's the spoof on Scientology a little bit. It's the, you're a member of mind head?
Oh, yes.
That's
yes.
So great.
And it was Terrence Stamp. Is that his name? It was an actor. He played a villain in a lot of great movies.
Yeah,
British actor.
Great character actor.
Brilliant actor.
Yeah.
Five things came to mind just now. One was to finish the one thought that we have a mutual friend, Ben Folds, who we've been both treasure. And I met you after one of his concerts. And then, I don't know, how did I do this? I told someone that you and I were friends. Mm-hmm. It might have been in the press. I don't know. And then I ran into you at an airport, and I said, yes. I'm so sorry that I said we were friends. We're not even acquaintances. We met after a Ben Folds concert, and that's called honesty. That's called you make a mistake, and you admit it. We don't live in that world right now.
We don't, but I must say though that I did feel a friendly kinship with you, even just meeting you at Ben's concert. And Ben, as you mentioned, is just a gem of a human being. And you know, anytime I've met a friend through Ben, I always know that's going to be a friend for life because he just has such amazing people around him. And
yes.
But then I remember that because I was getting out of my car at LAX and you were getting out of your car at LAX, and we kind of did one of those like we've met before, let's say hi. Things and I you know, I would have just been, you know, because I remember meeting you and I as a fan and just knowing how friendly you were, I was just going to be like, Bob, it's so great to see you again. And you, of course, because you are all honesty all the time, said, I can't believe I said we were friends, we're barely acquaintances. And me being an overthinking, you know, self-hating anxiety attack waiting to happen, thinking to myself, the whole time going through TSA, I'm going, oh man, Bob Saget, he regrets our friendship or something. Like he's trying to play down our friendship. Did I say something?
I was hoping for it.
But you're right. I mean, admittedly, we had not bonded from that one exchange. But
like people listening to this, and I call people sometimes. I have friends that are guests, and then I call people and see how they're doing, and they feel like they know me. So I felt like I knew you because I was such an admirer of your work, and I'd heard how funny you were. I've always watched. I mean, you're hilarious.
Thanks, Bob.
And for those that didn't see it, it's The Good Cop, and it had only one season on Netflix, and it deserved eight because it was so well written, and you were so everybody was so amazing in it.
You're very kind. It was a very sweet show. A lot of fun.
Just the truth.
A lot of fun. I would say a lot of would be problematic to be part of a show called The Good Cop right now.
That's a point.
It's
Tony Danza could sell that though. He could make it positive.
He could absolutely.
He said, "We're just talking about the good cops."
That's right. But you on set, listening to you improvise, and then like hearing you, because for those that know and love you, your comedy valve is on full blast at all. Your mind is an endless spout of things that make people laugh all the time.
It's very kind to hear it phrased that way.
To spend time with you is to laugh constantly. Cringe sometimes, but mostly laugh. And sometimes laugh cringe, which is the best kind of laugh.
That's the best.
Yeah.
And then a quick shortness of breath.
Right. And watching all the extras, because we were playing in a gym. We were in a gym and a pool was our scene. And so we had a lot of working out extras who were getting the Evian mist to make it look like they were sweating and, you know, all that stuff. And, wow, dear listener, the jokes that you had that day were definitely not of the PG variety that our script was.
And I had to be told, this happens to me a lot.
Were you told?
When there's more, everything I've ever done. I mean, I was on Full House for 8 years, for God's sake.
Of course. Sure.
So that when people are around, I'm like a 9-year-old. It's like, oh, people. And so I just say the wrong thing, and there's nice people walking by, and I'm saying pretty irreverent stuff. I'm on a treadmill. You're coming over to me. I'm threatening
what,
you. Or,
I want to know what back alley streets that 9-year-old was raised on. My God, you got a switchblade and a nickel bag of crack in your pocket.
On a podcast, and all of a sudden, someone comes after you on Twitter, and that's your judge and jury.
I also was a switchblade wielding 9-year-old.
That is when I first met you, and you scared the hell out of me.
I take offense to that. Yeah.
So The Good Cop was very well received, and I don't understand how the biz works anymore. I never have really. Sure. How did it affect you? You have this amazing career. You have the gift that you've had. You've been singing since you're at birth. You came out singing.
I singing for me was something I did just for fun, like in the privacy of my own bedroom. Cause I was not, you know, I was an extrovert. I was an introvert with an extroverted voice. You know, I had this big booming voice and I loved to sing big songs, but internally I was always very, very shy and very insecure about it. So, I did sing my whole life. My mom, was an art teacher before she kind of, you know, decided to just take care of us. We were very lucky that she became full-time mom. My dad was a jazz trumpet player before he went into business and became an executive search recruiter, strangely. And so, but they both had artistic sides of them. So as a kid growing up, again, very lucky growing up in Los Angeles, they would take my brother and I out to see a lot of things. And, you know, whereas everybody else was just kind of humming and, you know, show tunes afterwards, I would go back and I would learn them. And I wanted to like be that character that I would see on stage. So I did it, but I did it in private. I didn't know I could really sing until I was, you know, 13 or 14, when it was an arts teacher, a singing teacher that I had in school that brought me from the back of the choir and said, "You've got a really great voice." And then just to put it in perspective, I wasn't signed by David Foster to a record deal. I was signed 3 years later, 16, 17. So the catapult from kind of going, "Oh, I guess this is something people think might be good," to being kind of discovered was very, very fast. I've
Were you like 15 or 16 when you started? Is David the person that saw you?
I was 13 when I first was discovered by a teacher as having a good voice. And that's why I'm such a proponent of arts education, why I have an arts education foundation, because it was an eye-opening experience for me, for somebody who, you know, like I said, was introverted, very shy, was suffering severely from ADD and ADHD when I was younger. I've managed to take real control of it as an adult, but when I was younger, it was...
This is personal, but since you brought it up, I have it, it's in my family, it's in my DNA.
Yeah.
I wasn't medicated, but were
you? Me neither. No, I wasn't.
I probably should have been, but that in retrospect, I find out I'm lucky I was able to handle it somehow.
You know,
with therapy and with people telling me to just stop it.
Exactly. And I've talked about it more and more as an adult, and as an adult that has, you know, and again, people with ADD, and it's very hard to give yourself a pat on the back, you know, and so because you grow up with such shame for the ways that you've fallen behind and the ways people kind of look at you differently or the way that you learn differently. And as you know, it has nothing to do with intelligence and only to do with how you take in that information. So, you know, having the arts as a way to express myself and feel confident for the first time and feel like that was a language I could use not only to help my academic skills, but to help me in my relationship with my friends, with my parents, with myself. It gave me a sense of self-love for the first time as a student. And that happened at about 13. That was at a pivotal time for me because that was at an age where it could have gone either way. You know, I could have taken that shame and that, all that discouragement and self anger at such a volatile age. And I could have been the switchblade kid. You know, I could have decided to rebel against what I was so unhappy with, even though I have the most extraordinary parents in the world. I know what inner turmoil I was going through, and it could have gone the other way. And so the arts saved my life in many, many ways. So, but you know, to your original question, to have that growing up was amazing. I've had a very nuanced career. I'm very lucky. For the first half of my career, I was really kind of, very protective of the image. Like you get signed and you raise your bar of what's expected of you. And there's very much a certain thing that you become famous for. And part of it's by design and part of it is completely by accident. And you don't want to blow it because you also see lots of people who don't get the same opportunities or had the same opportunities and find ways to somehow step in it and really make mistakes. And so you're really careful, especially since I was so young. But, you know, but about halfway through my career, I made a conscious decision that I was going to try and really show more sides and really just try to have more fun, relax a little bit, say no a little bit less and allow myself to
That's
be uncomfortable.
That's very hard to do.
It is. Be uncomfortable, meet people that aren't in my world that might introduce me to a new style of music, might introduce me to a new style of performing or acting or whatever else. And so, you know, I just started kind of meeting all kinds of wonderful people and collaborating with people like Ben Folds and meeting you and doing weird, great cameos in comedies. And eventually that led to Andy Breckman saying, I thought of you for this script, and it fell in my lap. I was about to do another album. And I said, you know, this is it's like Temple Grandin. You know, when you get those doors, you just got to walk through.
When the door opens. When the door,
the door opens, you got to walk through it.
And you were so good on it. You have such an amazing mind and a facility for learning and understanding material, because it's also when you have good material, it's easy to learn it. You had to have some grief when it was not picked up.
I was, because
I'm not dwelling on the negative, because a door closes, you let another one open.
Of course. And I actually haven't talked a whole lot about the good cop thing. And I think that you're the perfect person to talk to about it, because, you know, you have such a rich history in television and
of
otherwise
getting canceled.
and renewed as well.
As much as possible.
It's an ebb and flow, it's a peak and valley for anybody who has, I believe, a well worth and nuanced career. And so I think, because you have to take educated risks in your career, and you're gonna have to suffer a few losses, but you're gonna have big wins.
And make changes, and people don't deal well with change if they like you as one thing.
Exactly. So The Good Cop was a big gamble for me. It was a big gamble for Andy. I had done acting. I had just come off of, you know, Broadway doing, you know, 8 shows a week was a great acting. There's no better acting lesson than theater.
Was that Spring Awakening?
That was Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, which was a challenging vocally, emotionally. That was boot camp for me. It's the hardest I ever worked. So
how long did you do that for?
I did it for a year. So
that's amazing. I just wanted to put you in Spring Awakening because you would have sex on stage. So I just envision. I'm sorry, I went
there. Oh man, I wonder if there's. I can't imagine if there's like intimacy choreography for. We had to do fight choreography for Great Comet, and so if you have fight choreography, you have to show up to set 30 minutes before call so that you run your fight in slow motion.
I did
motion.
That in Hand to God when I when I came in. And that was you have to show up to make sure you're on point.
That your choreography is right because
I never
in
got
fight
it
scenes,
right.
Yeah. You never did? Oh, well.
No. I mean, I never hurt anybody.
But that's the important
and
thing.
And it was physically hard. To have a fight and to overpower someone. I was supposed to overpower one of my students.
Well, you let them take it. I think what the audience isn't seeing is how much inertia and energy the other actor is putting into it. And so you're looking like you're really tossing this guy around the stage. And really, in reality, it's their core strength, you know, doing all the work. And you learn that from stunt people and all that. I learned that on the set of The Good Cop. I got to do all my own stunts on The Good Cop, which was a lot of fun. I got to, you know, fire off blanks and run through obstacle courses and had a fight in a kitchen and had to be tossed around. My L4, L5 still shot to hell because of that kitchen fight.
I'm sorry.
So, yeah. Oh, it's
I wasn't
okay.
there.
It's also just turning 40. You know, it's all one and the same. But,
well,
I was
a little older. I'm 40 plus.
41, 42 and a half. But I was bummed. I was bummed. And I'll tell you why. Because, you know, when besides the obvious reasons, of course, if you put your time and energy into something, you know, as you know, hour long single cam is a big commitment. It's a lot of time on set. It's a lot of time with your fellow actors, your crew, the people who created it. And it's, you feel like you've all been given a shot to do something interesting, to do something, you know, fun that people would enjoy. And of course, naturally you're in a bubble. You're in a bubble. You're biased. You're in it and you're going, this is great. You know, the people are going to love this. And
it was a great show.
I totally believe that. And we were so thrilled for the reviews that were fantastic. We were thrilled and we believed them. I think what wound up happening, and you know, again, no fault of anybody's was it was at a time when there was a lot coming out on Netflix. We were released during there have been a couple kind of Netflix content explosions where everybody was saying, I have a Netflix show. And everybody was going, oh my God, you have a Netflix show? That's extraordinary. But it felt great to say it, but you knew you were also one of, you know, $7 billion spent of content that was being created by this juggernaut. And so, you know, while we were excited to be in our world and we had a great budget and Netflix took such good care of us and were super supportive, we also knew we were going to be released with a lot of very edgy material. We were kind of a network style procedural on a streaming platform that everybody wanted to see the next true crime, you know, death photos. And so
I can't watch that stuff.
It was at a time where it had a hard time finding its groove. And had it been on, you know, a network show or something like that, maybe it would have been different. But the real reason that I was bummed about it was because I was able, all of us were able to see in hindsight where it was great, where we could improve. Any show has that, where you end a season and the actors are all sitting around going, I can't wait to improve on X, Y, and Z if we get the next shot.
Right.
That's how shows evolve. Some of my favorite shows, I didn't necessarily love the first five episodes ever.
Exactly. I went through that. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go. No, no, please.
I was just going to say with Succession, which I got obsessed with, the first four shows, I was like, everybody I would call
slow burn
would say, stay with it. Don't be a fool. And it was
absolutely
rewarding. Very rewarding.
There's a few shows I felt that way about. Russian Doll was one of them, you know, where it's just, I stuck with it. And
I have one of those. My wife's out of town.
Is it are we talking about the ones, the babushkas, where you get to the little tiny one in the middle?
Yeah, exactly. You just undo them. Yeah, nothing lascivious about them.
The smallest one
comes with lube.
My favorite thing about our dynamic is I like to G-rate you set up an R-rated volleyball, and I'll slam down the G-rated spike.
And we need that.
In 1929, the Shane family opened our first jewelry store. Even then, we were intent on being different. We wanted to be more than a jeweler. We wanted to be a friend. Our intentions haven't changed. When you visit Shane Company, you're treated like a friend, and your purchases come with the best warranty in the industry. You can be assured we'll always be here for you. Most jewelers will charge you for their warranty. Our warranty is free for a lifetime and even covers the center stone. We're able to offer you an unparalleled warranty because of the quality of our jewelry. Whether it's an engagement ring, a wedding band, a stunning necklace, earrings, or a bracelet, the structure and design of our jewelry ensures it will last a lifetime because that's what a friend would do. Now you have a friend in the jewelry business, Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
Here's a question for you. What I love about you is your positivity. And a lot of people...
On the surface.
Well, same here, because the world's pretty damn heavy.
I try.
Yeah. And we're all feeling it, everybody. And no matter what you believe in, people are hurting, no matter what.
Yeah.
And obviously it all has to somehow magically turn into a discourse and people come together and all those things that are probably impossible from humanity ever.
Sure. Yeah.
Because a couple of us are flawed, but you know, I work on it. But I wake up trying to be positive unless it's been a really rough night or got difficult news about people I care about or things like that, or just I watch the news or something. But you, what I adore about you, and Ben Folds has it, and most of my friends have it, even people that are journalists that are in this world that have to do this for a living and look at it all day long.
God bless them. I don't know how they do it.
You stay positive? Yeah. It's your nature, I think, isn't it?
I try, you know, I feel so lucky that I have art to experience as a fan, to listen to, that I have a piano that I'm, you know, that I can sit at and, you know, get that out and express myself that way. To have, honestly, like, this Zoom is such a, in this pod, we're podcasting, but we're also Zooming. I can see your lovely face, is so important, you know, for those listening, you know, to make the effort to reach out and say, hey, you want to FaceTime and catch up? Hey, you want to, let's get on FaceTime and watch a movie together or something.
I've been doing that. I've been hanging out with a couple friends.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing I took for granted when we could all just go down the road and get a drink. And, you know, we're social creatures. And even I say I'm an introvert, but we all need that connectivity. And so, you know, I appreciate so much your kindness and your kind words. But when I'm not, we all have those times, especially right now where we're offline, where we're alone with our thoughts and it can get dark. And it's important that you take those little steps just to reach out. It's good for you, but it's also potentially, you know, life-saving in many ways for the person you're reaching out to, who may not have that inner positivity or strength to say, you know what, I need to take that step today. So
everybody needs to hear it in some way.
Yeah.
Everybody, even the people that are out giving empowerment speeches or
I would even argue sometimes, especially those people, because the people that I know that are the most extroverted about positively affecting those around them, that really you say to yourself, man, they thank God for their wisdom and they're lifting my spirits. They must really have their shit together. A lot of times they expel that around them in order to fill a void of some kind of sadness or something that they're missing. And a lot of times I have felt wrongly that the person that is most energized to reach out probably doesn't need to be reached out to as much because they're fine. They're doing okay. And it couldn't be farther from the truth. A lot of times it's the opposite. So yeah.
No, I think you're right. It's not Tony Robbins specifically, because I don't know him, but I would imagine he wakes up and goes through all human stuff and then goes showtime. And you've got to be here.
Yeah.
I don't wake up like a robot and just go, all right, let's go tell some jokes.
None of us do. We all put on our pants one leg at a time, Bob.
I put them on. We all put them on. I always said,
here we go.
Over our heads, arms in the legs, and head through
that's
the
right.
zipper. Everybody does that, right?
I was going to say, if anybody's having any kind of mild or not mild depression during these times, get yourself a full-length mirror and do what Bob just said. There is no way you will have a bad day, or
put
at least a bad 5 minutes.
Put your arms in the legs.
Put your arms
stick
through
your
the
head.
Legs.
It has to be a tiny head. If the buttons closed or the snap or whatever the heck you have in your pants, you have to have like a 4-inch circumference head.
I mean, maybe just designate a pair of pants to tailor for your head size.
That's brilliant. And make a bigger zipper. Maybe one that goes all the way around to the back.
Hey, listen. So, Sharks, we got three things for you, Sharks, today. I can't imagine that not being a good time.
Will you go on Shark Tank with me, both of us? I present it all, and you just go, what Bob is trying to say.
Trying to say, and which I will explain further in song. Yeah.
Do you get asked to sing constantly all the time? Because your voice is like, it comes down from, I would say the heavens, but it's a metaphor. I mean, it's such a gift.
I wish it did sometimes. It's a lot of hard work. And, the key is to make it look easy. It's a lot of ugly noises before you make pretty ones out there. But
do you do a lot of vocal training? Do you work with people?
Yeah. Yeah. I try, everybody hates warming up and doing practice exercises and things like that. But it's important. I've got a great, great voice coach. Her name's Kristen Blodgett. She's out of New York, and she's also a music director. And she really kind of, I went to her at a time when I was having like kind of a little bit of an existential crisis about my voice. I was feeling a little like wound up, and I'd been singing, so much since I was 14 years old, just endlessly. And I didn't need to get my voice back in shape. I needed to get my mind in shape because I started to get mushy about my drive and my focus and my purpose as a singer. And she really helped me unwind, because the mind and the voice are so intertwined, and you can have all kinds of battles, inner demon battles with yourself as a vocalist, that can affect the way you interpret, the way you perform.
And it can add nerves, which can cause you to choke. And then all of a sudden you don't have a voice, and it's not caused by an illness.
Right. You're not actually sick.
It's happened to me.
You're not actually even tired. Your brain has just clenched you to the point of inactivity.
The choke closed.
Yeah. It's happened to me a couple times. And
it happens to me 9 out of 10 times. hi, everybody.
I mean, if one is going to pick a new brand, I guess it's a foolproof brand to have you're going to love this. He's going to mess up and have to leave the stage. This is why we come, that's a good safety.
What if there's a device like a disc we could put, Shark Tank idea, a disc we put in the throat that opens the throttle.
Oh,
so you're
man.
Full out and it's plastic and you swallow it. And it also keeps you from getting COVID. What if we go on, we go and we sell that to Shark Tank.
Yeah, I think this is by far the best idea we've had of the three I think we've had previously. This is the one I'd run up the flagpole.
Something you swallow that will just lock. It has to be stitched. It has to be put there.
Well, it would be some kind of bionic surgery to have. I imagine that for any kind of vocal competition, it probably would not be allowed. They'd want you au naturel. For those of us that, wouldn't have a problem, juicing up, so to speak, with this procedure. Opens you right up. And then we put Fauci's, whatever the vaccine is, from Operation Warp Speed.
He doesn't get fired. I mean,
we just dip it.
What if they decide to fire him and just have somebody from some drugstore be the person?
I was really trying to stay positive. I've had another little mini anxiety attack.
I've met him years ago at the NIH because I do my benefits for scleroderma.
Oh, sure.
And he was trying to help the founder, Sharon Monsky.
Yeah.
And at that time, he had done so much work for HIV that was so amazing.
Yes.
Which was introducing the cocktails for it.
Yes.
And he was so charming and such a good man. I'd pretty much do anything he said.
He's a good person. He's brilliant and he's charismatic. All the things that Trump hates around him. He's definitely at risk, I think. But I think even to Trump, there would be too much of a risk not to have him. I think, but it's discouraging when he's not allowed to talk. He's not been up at the podium for a minute now. And I think we're all just kind of looking for a voice of reason, especially since we, you know, wasted 3 months, you know, to try and figure this out. And now we're slowly opening back up and things are getting worse than ever. We just want direction. But
One Direction too.
Can I ask you a question? Yes, please.
I like him because he's positive, but what does Harry Styles do?
interesting question.
He's a good singer, right?
He is. He's a great singer. I actually like his songs a lot. Yeah.
All right. Because I wasn't sure because I haven't really sat down. I've never seen him in concert. And people adore him. And he is... Yeah. He is adorable. He is.
Oh yeah, he's a handsome man. There's no question. Yes. He's infuriatingly good looking.
And he's very positive. He puts off a very fun
vibe. I agree.
I think that's a big part of the package. So I need to listen to his music more.
Yeah. I didn't think that defending Harry Styles would be one of the. I didn't prepare for this topic
that
today,
won't
Bob.
Be, but I retracted my you having to defend him because I was.
But
saying,
while we're gladly talking about it, I will say that, you know, I assume, I've never been in a boy band, but I would assume that, talk about losing your identity, it would be very, very hard to find your way artistically, certainly in said band, when you have fans that talk about fans wanting you to stay a certain way, getting obsessed with the way you are on your poster. But also just because you become such a cash cow, I would imagine that there's that pressure.
You called Harry Styles a cow?
Just don't quote me on that.
That's the soundbite.
He's wonderful. Out of context.
He's right. So he's wonderful, and I should take in his music. Yeah, and I'm ignorant not having come to the program.
He's become a really wonderful solo artist, and I think his songs are great. And I think his message is really forward and positive. So I'm all for Harry Styles.
All right. Well, I'm glad that was the biggest issue of the day. That's where I went to a think tank to come up with that stupid nonsense.
It should be a recurring question for all your guests with maybe a jingle. How do you feel about Harry Styles? And just you ask each person, you know, a separate question about Harry Styles. I'm for it. Glad we could get it started.
I vote yes on Harry Styles.
Good. I vote yes, too.
I have two thumbs up.
Good, good.
I think it's time for a break so I can regroup my brain. I need to just get some protein in my head. Have you gotten in any discrepancies with friends over all the different issues that are so serious in our world? Have you had problems with some of your friends? Have you gotten into it?
No, actually.
That's because you're the best person on the earth, honestly.
No, I don't. I think it's natural. Your close friends are usually, you kind of meet through certain social circles and you have kind of like-minded views of the world, or hopefully you do. That's not to say I would be opposed to being friends with somebody with differing opinions. I actually love to get into discourses about if they're intelligent, about why something, I might see something another way. You know, one of the great benefits to being in my job and your job too, is that you actually get to take a road trip across the country and you get to, you know, stop in towns where you wouldn't normally get to just talk to people about the way they live, about the city they are, about the lifestyle and what government means to them, what the government provides, what that means to them, politics. And so I relish in the conversations where I'm able to get a perspective that might be different from what I get on whatever selective cable news channel I get or the articles I read or whatever else. That said, I do think there are some intrinsic universal, or should be at least, truths about human dignity, about equality, about rights, that should be untouchables. And where that's concerned, I have no tolerance for intolerance, which might be a
same,
you know, but
I mean, it's obvious though. Truth is so important, and we don't know what the truth is, but we know in our hearts what the truth is, which is human rights and goodness to people and love. And it's become a time where if you say all you need is love, like the Beatles did, it's looked at cynically right now because there's so much pain and so much division.
There is. And there's a little bit of the, you know, we don't need any more thoughts and prayers for issues like gun control and all that, which is a righteous anger. I think there is a desire across the country. And I really do think it crosses the aisle much more than the cable news channels would like to make us believe for ratings. I do think there's more common ground in this country. And I think the problem with somebody like Trump, I'm not anti-Republican, I'm anti-Trump. I have friends that are Republican.
I just had a wonderful time with a friend of mine the other night. And I don't even know, he doesn't even call himself a Republican, but that would be his party of choice right now if things were not represented by someone, sadly, who does. Some people don't care that he lies all the time. I do. They just go, hey, so what? I lie all the time. But I'm sorry, I'm not made that way. I just can't take lying that you threw a pitch at a baseball game that they wanted you to do it, but you did. That's a 5-year-old stealing something in a hardware store. Yeah.
I think you know, to that point, we desperately need a leader, whether it's a Democrat or Republican or otherwise, that allows us to have an articulate, intelligent, and disagreeing at times discourse in this country, where we all as Americans can come together and we can argue, we can talk about it, we can share, we can say, well, in the city that I live in, this issue is greater to me than the city you live in, and we're going to have a different opinion about it because we live very different styles of life. And that's, we are in a huge country where, depending on the state you're in or the city that you're in, it's just a different lifestyle that we can all as Americans, you know, decide to move somewhere and have that, which is a beautiful thing. If we're lucky, a lot of people can't, but
a lot of people are hurting bad. And that's
a lot of people are hurting very, very badly. So I think,
and I know you feel like I do for everybody, but that doesn't, for people that are hurting that bad, they're going, yeah, well, you're entitled showbiz people and you're all liberals. And that's just not true.
It does. And for anybody that is in a recognized position of privilege, it's more important than ever that you block out the noise and you really listen to those that need the help. You really listen to those that are angry and righteously angry.
Right on.
And do what you can to just say, I'm here, I'm listening, and activate me as an ally to your cause in whatever capacity you need. I feel like the fact that we don't have a day where everybody can guilt-free, without a ding to their paycheck, take off work to make the most important decision the country will have is extraordinary. We don't have that. But
it might have to be 2 days of voting so that people, especially during COVID, that would be a good federal law, if that makes any sense. I don't know if it's a good idea or not.
Yeah.
But it's a Shark Tank. We'll bring it up at Shark Tank.
We'll bring it up. Yeah. Again, our ideas are getting better, I have to say, as our conversations
going on.
Better
than me wanting to put like a throat thing in a disc. That's I'm starting to think
all of them.
Yeah, I don't think
we're back in the green room having these ideas, but they're good ideas. I posted Obama's John Lewis eulogy, which was, I felt, extraordinary on its surface, because what an eloquent, incredible speaker, as there have been many Republican eloquent and great speakers. But you know, the fact that he was honoring John Lewis's legacy by stirring up a little politics about how we need to fight for voting rights, which was John Lewis's final wish.
I've spent my life going to funerals. Okay. Since I was young, people were dying, and any ones that I've spoken at of people that I knew very well, I thought, what would they want me to say? And that's what Obama did. What would make John Lewis happy right now is to keep his memory alive by saying exactly what John Lewis would say. Obama's much too smart to have not done that. He used it as a political platform.
How dare he tarnish the name of John Lewis and politicize it? You know, what a disingenuous thing to say, because there is nothing. John Lewis was looking down on Obama during that speech and saying, right on, you know, that he represented in that speech everything John Lewis fought for in the time we were lucky enough to have him on this earth, but also in his final plea to us as a nation and as a world, of how to continue to pass the torch, how the fight is never over, and we need
and
to keep doing it.
And very close to his death.
Absolutely. So, you know, no, I'm quite over the disingenuous. We can't politicize when a school is shot up. We can't politicize a message of somebody who that's all they fought for at their funeral. No. Politics are people. Politics are about people. And it's
disingenuous.
They're supposed
to be representing what people need. But different people need different things. In some
places.
Well,
that's very true.
You know, the gun thing, I can't even go there. I mean, I know that. I just know if I have a gun, I'm the one that's going to get shot. I just know that. That's how I work. You know, right. The doorbell rings, I shoot myself. You know, right. It's just, someone's at the window, I shoot
and
myself.
That's your Second Amendment right to decide
to shoot
whether
myself.
To decide, sure, but to decide whether or not that is a risk you want to take. You know, and the argument.
I'm not saying I don't have a gun in case anybody really loves them, but. I'm just saying if I did have a gun,
right,
that I'd would be really good on the witness
stand.
I think we can
all agree that might be a huge mistake. Yes. So
my wife would shoot me. Bob, I hear something in the house. What? Yeah. Bam. You know,
bam.
I'm just on the wall.
Well, there's no question. It's they're dangerous. But
I have a back scratcher by the bed. So if anybody breaks in, I give them a quick little scratch and they calm down.
You know, then you get the burglar to say, all right. You did mine. I guess I'll scratch yours. What do
and
you
then
say?
They, with the butt of my gun.
Yeah. While his partner in crime is putting all your silver spoons into a giant sack. That's how burglars operate now, right? I watch all the movies.
Yeah, sacks with silver spoons from the
30s. My last burglar reference in pop culture was Home Alone. So I don't know. I imagine they.
You just hit them with you hit them with a can of paint. They're done. Yeah.
They wear a Hamburglar kind of mask and they
absolutely.
Go in and their partner goes in and does a bunch of back scratching, and the other one is putting the fine china into a giant sack and hoisting it over his back.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, you only see me from here, so I don't want to talk about a giant sack. But you know, as you get older, Are you going out? Are you going to restaurants? Aren't you glad I got out of that?
I know you were waiting for me to G-rate it, but I decided to just let it stew.
I love that. I actually had my giant sack in stew, and then it was a horrible stew. It was a balya base.
Yeah.
I'll be funny next month. But are you dying to perform like I am? Are you dying to get out there and tour?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm always the happiest in front of an audience. I love the studio. I love the idea of kind of being in the studio and crafting something that's forever and being proud of it. But the reward is to get out and sing it for people who are, you know, taking a moment out of their lives to come share that wonderful space that only live performance can bring. I love it as an audience member and I love doing it on stage, but yeah, for those of us that are performers, and I've got so many friends on Broadway who've been displaced by this on Broadway. And,
oh my God, it's going to be
heart,
so wild.
My heart goes out to that community and to so many others that are waiting. Because we, for those of us that have the bug, you know, it's a great part of our mental health is to go out and do that. And it gives us something, gives our soul something that feels a little empty otherwise. And so
it's selfish, but you're getting so much from that audience. And from the work.
You hope it's a win-win.
And it is. I mean, you find out it is. Because here you go, touring the world, selling out everywhere. And if anybody is, if anybody's listening and they haven't ever seen Josh in concert, next year when he's out again, which will happen.
I hope so.
It has to. I mean, we've got trillions of dollars. We've never ever had this big of a machine to find a vaccine, and it will exist. We're behind. We lagged in our behavior, but you have to incubate this stuff. I know because I'm doing it in my fridge. I've got I took all my nose swabs and I boiled them, and then I put eggs on them. And I put it in my fridge and I added some gelatin. I'm just saying audiences will, if you haven't seen Josh live, it is, it's such a positive, wonderful
Thanks, Bob.
Thing to be part of.
I appreciate that so much.
Well, you be well. And
you too.
Thank you. I miss you right now. So
you too, my friend.
All right. I'll see you soon.
Talk soon. Yeah. You got it.
And don't forget to vote.
And don't forget to vote if we haven't mentioned it already.
No, we haven't. I'll see you on Shark Tank.
You got it.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was my friend Josh Groban, and I couldn't love him anymore. So I'm not going to love him anymore. No, he is he's a very special man. You know that. If you've never seen him live, you must. If you can see him in concert. I also recommend Harry Styles very heavily. So please go see him. He's joyous. And I'm going to catch up on all of his stuff. I'm sending you all my best right now. Thanks for listening. You know what to do. You subscribe. You can follow. You rate and review it and give it 5 stars. I can't take the pain. I'm a sensitive man. And don't say mean things in the review, because it's just, I mean, well, if you got your freedom, you can say it. I guess I can take it. I won't read it. Well, maybe I will. Anyway, enough about how we look at all that crap. I'm just wishing you well. And everything Josh said is how I feel. Just sending everybody a lot of love and a lot of hope that we'll get through this time and be better for it. Be better and grow from it. Peace out, as we say. I don't know who says it, but somebody does.
Hey, let's talk about diamonds. Selecting a diamond for an engagement ring is not an everyday experience. It's an important purchase, and at Chain Company, we make it informative and fun. And honestly, it's easy. Cut, color, clarity, and carat weight are important. They're your 4 C's. But here's the deal. At Chain Company, we won't just tell you our diamonds are more beautiful. We'll show you. Come in to compare a Chain Company diamond side by side with a non-Chain Company diamond in the same grade. You'll see for yourself that our diamond has more beauty and sparkle. You'll be blown away when you see that 2 diamonds in the exact same grade can look so different. Our diamond experts examine each diamond individually and hand-select each diamond for its beauty. Whether you're shopping in person or online, we have the same rigorous selection process for all the diamonds we sell. Visit us today. You'll have the confidence to pick the diamond that's perfect for you.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business. Chain Company and ShaneCo.com.